This is the story of the one. As a custodial supervisor at a high school, he knows that during cold and flu season, germs spread fast. It's why he partners with Grainger to stay fully stocked on the products and supplies he needs, from tissues to disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Also that he can help students, staff, and teachers stay healthy and focused. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
The following podcast is a Dear Media production.
Welcome back to another episode of Trading Secrets. Today I am joined by renowned talk show host Steve Wilkos. Most of you know Steve for one of two things: the head security in the one and only Jerry Springer, or as the host of the long-standing talk show, The Steve Wilkos Show, or both, since 2007. What you may not know is Steve is a United States Marine Corps veteran and was a Chicago Police Department law enforcement officer for 14 years. He has established himself as an authoritative figure known for his abrasive yet constructive approach to helping guests on his show settle disputes and better themselves moving forward. Steve, the viewers have been asking for you. We got you, and we are so excited to have you today. Thanks for being on Trading Secrets.
Thanks for having me on.
And first and foremost, I want to thank you for your service. We're going to get into the details of the show, what led you to the show. Before we do that, the trajectory of your career from being a United States Marine Corps to then being a cop and launching your way into Hollywood is something that's extremely unconventional. I want to learn how that happened. Before I do, there might be people out there that are interested in general in just the law enforcement career. Right now in 2021, the average cop made $65,000. So when you joined to be a cop, what was the salary like then and what made you do it?
So my starting salary was in 1990. I got on the police department. I made $26,500, and I just transitioned out of the Marine Corps, where I was making, as a sergeant with 6 years of service, I was making like $12,000. So I felt like I was rich, and I had a Dodge Colt that was paid off, and I had a basement apartment that I was paying $450 a month in rent. So I was, you know, I was feeling pretty good about myself. But the reason why I became a police officer and went into the Marines was my father was a paratrooper in the Korean War or Korean conflict, and then he was a Chicago police officer. So my dad, you know, when I was a kid, he was like Superman, you know, so I wanted to be just like my father. And so, you know, I was kind of a screw up in high school, and my dad's like, listen, go into the military, you'll, you know, straighten out and, you know, you'll have something. Because a lot of my friends, some of my friends were just bums hanging around the block after high school. Nobody went to college, but, you know, in our neighborhood, no males went to college. So I wanted to do something in my life, and that's why I went into the Marines, and it was the best decision I ever made. And then, like I said, I got out. I wanted to be a policeman just like my father, and I was going to do it for 30 years and retire from the police department just like my dad did. And but then one day I got asked to work security on the Jerry Springer Show. I didn't even know who Jerry was. I went there to work for one day, and one day turned into 28 years later, I'm still here.
Okay, we're going to talk about how you got that call. Before we do, there might be some parents out there that have kids that are serving right now, or there might be some kids listening right now that are serving. What advice, knowing what you know now about Hollywood, entertainment, making it big, to also the perception of making it big by doubling your salary from $12,000 to $26,000 when you got out, what type of advice would you have for someone coming out of military work right now and entering into the work world?
You know, I enlisted for 3 and then I reenlisted for 4, you know, and there was a 6-month overlap. So I ended up doing 6.5 years. But when I got to 5 years, I was going to sign up for another 5 years after my 6 years. And that would have took me at 11, 12 years. I definitely would have did 20 years in the Marine Corps and got a pension. But I wanted to go to embassy duty when I signed my next contract. And they, you know, in the Marine Corps, they tell you one thing and then they do whatever they want. So they were like, oh, go back out in the fleet and then we'll give you embassy duty. Well, then I said, okay, maybe it's time to get out of the Marine Corps, go back to Chicago. So when I knew, and I had like a year and a half before I was going to get out, I started making plans about, I didn't want to get out of the Marine Corps and have nothing. So I kept in touch with like a lot of buddies in Chicago. I knew the police test was coming out. So I flew back to Chicago. I took the police test. So I was trying to line up things before I got out so that as soon as I got out of Marine Corps, I hit the ground running. I could have collected unemployment. I didn't want to do that. I wanted to work. And so even the day I got out, I lined up a nightclub job, bouncing at a nightclub. I was working at for a few months. And then about 9 months later, I got called to the police academy. So I would say be prepared. Don't just get out and then start looking. When you know that you, when you make your decision that you're going to transition out of the military, kind of get ahead of the curve.
I like that. And then when you went to Chicago Police Department, how many years did you serve before you ended up taking off?
Well, I did. I was on the police department from March of 1990, and I left it 1 week before September 11th.
Oh, my gosh.
Just coincidentally, right?
Wow.
What happened was I took a leave of absence, and then I resigned a few years later. But I took a leave of absence because I was making quite a bit of money on Springer. I mean, nothing like I'm making now, but pretty good salary, much more than a policeman's salary. And I married my wife, who ended up being the executive producer of Springer, and she's the executive producer of my show now. And she said, listen, I would come home, and I worked in a very violent district in Chicago, and I would come home with blood on my uniform, and my wife would be like, she didn't understand, like, people just, you know, didn't stick their arms out and put the handcuffs on and go to jail. Like, I go, people fight us. I had to explain it to her. I'm like, we have to use a lot of force sometimes to affect the rest. So she didn't get that. So one time I came home, my uniform was just like I took a tomato soup bath, right? Like, she goes, that's it. You're quitting, you know. And I said, you know what? Maybe you're right. Because she broke it down to me. She goes, listen, when the Springer show is over, we're not staying and living on your policeman salary. She goes, I'm a TV producer. We're going to go to L.A. or we're going to go to New York and, you know, you'll find your thing to do, but I'll be producing. I said, you know what? Right. And I took a leave of absence from the police department. And, you know, my dad, you know, I was, you only got 8 more years to pension.
Yeah, pension. Yeah, know? Get paid out.
And my dad didn't understand the kind of money I was making. And so, and even like as soon as I left, because I was so busy between the police department working on a Springer show, I didn't have a lot of free time. So when I left the police department, all of a sudden I would do these autograph circuit through these car shows all over the country, and I'd make $5,000-$7,000 in 2 days' work, where that's more than I made during a whole month being a policeman.
Yeah.
So, you know, the money that I lost being a policeman, I made up, you know, just doing a few appearances throughout the year.
Yeah, it reminds me a little bit of the world when I had my MBA, 10 years corporate banking, move all over, get myself up the corporate ladder to tell my parents I'm going on a reality dating show. To say the least, they weren't thrilled. But right. Then when I started dropping, Dad, I'm getting paid $10K to show up to this bar.
Yeah.
Like, what the hell? I don't believe until I see it. And then they saw it.
Lowe's knows how to help make your home holiday ready for less. Get Select Style Selections vinyl flooring for just $1.99 per square foot and have it installed before the festivities begin. Our team can help you every step of the way. See a Lowe's Red Vest associate or visit lowes.com/holidayinstall to get started. Lowe's, we help, you save. Basic install only. Date restrictions apply. Subject to availability. Install by independent contractor. See associate for details. Contiguous U.S. only.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, ugh, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Let's talk about that transition. So how long, though, before you left, were you managing these crazy worlds of being on TV, the security of Jerry Springer, and then going to serve as a policeman? How long was that? What was that balance like?
So in 1994, like I said, I got on the police department in 1990. In 1994, Mike McDermott, who's still on my show, runs, we were policemen together in 14th District, He was already working through Pinkerton. When the show needed security guards, they would call Pinkerton. Well, there was these guys there. They cut Pinkerton out and said, hey, don't call Pinkerton, call us directly. You know. So Mike was one of those guys, and he said, I was walking on a station, he knew another guy. He said, hey, you want to work security? And I said, what is it? And he goes, you know, it's a talk show on TV. You got to wear a suit and tie, be there. I said, great, I'm there.
What does he offer you, like a pay-wise?
$35 an hour.
Okay.
Now, this is, I'm probably making 22 as a cop.
Sure, so it sounds so good.
35 an hour, I'm like, oh, I'm in.
I'll throw a tie on.
Exactly. And so I went there, and like I said, it was supposed to be for one day. I went there, nothing happened. I mean, I have very vague memories of my first day there. Well, they knew they could always call me and I'd be there. So it was this sheriff that was actually running the show, and Mike worked for him. So the sheriff, he would call me. He didn't even know who I was, but he was a guy that he knew I could count on. So this guy was kind of unreliable, though. You know, the show would call him, and he'd be like, he wouldn't show up, this and that. But he had the gig, and he was running things. Well, one day we had this big show, and it was going to be, you know, a lot of conflict and, you know, supercharging the audience. Well, he doesn't show up, so they call him up, and they're like, hey, man, where are you? And he said, well, my wife's got the car. Send a limo for me. Ooh, you know, like the show would send limos for guys.
Yeah, yeah.
And this young producer, he just hung up the phone on him. He looked at me and goes, hey, you want to run security here? I go, yeah. You know,
just like
so,
that.
Boom, man. Like all of a sudden I went from nobody, low man, told bull, I was running security. And, you know, and at first, like we didn't play a big role on the show. And then, but they would need to find a guest in Seattle, and I'd get on a plane. I'd go to Seattle and I'd go track that person down, or they'd have a problem with the guest. They had to be babysit all night long in a hotel, and I did it. So whatever the show asked me, I did it because I knew, man, like, yeah, I'm getting my foot in the door. It was pretty good. And it was funny because then a stage manager left the Springer show and started because Danny Bonaducci was just starting in Chicago.
Okay.
And he called me up and said, hey, we'd love to have you run security here at Danny. And this is before Springer was a hit.
Okay.
And he goes, we'd love for you to run. We'll pay you more to come over and do Danny Bonaducci's security. I was like, nah, I'm good here. And it was the best call of my life because I don't think Bonaducci made it out of his first year. And I certainly wouldn't have got my own TV show out of Bonaducci. But so, you know, staying on Springer really worked out. And so then the show did start changing format, and it were conflict driven. There was fights. And we start, you know, I'd be on stage a lot breaking up fights. And then when we first doing it, we were wearing our own clothes, suit and ties. And then we start wearing Jerry Springer security mm-hmm. shirts. And the old executive producer of Springer, we were doing Springer Break from Daytona Beach. And he said, why don't you shave your head? Now, I didn't have hair like you. I mean, I had Marine Corps style hair. He said, I'm going to make you a star. I said, well, sounds good to me. So I went and I shaved my head, and I looked like Jesus with the thorn crown put on his head because I nicked my whole head up. You know? And it was crazy because... And this was like 1997, before email, and, you know, I didn't even have a computer. People write letters still, man. All of a sudden, you know, Miracle on 34th Street, when everybody's writing their letters in the sand and bags of mail are coming in. That's how it was. I mean,
really,
bags of mail coming in, women sending me pictures. It was crazy. Then I became just a big part of the show, you know. People start chanting my name, but I still was a policeman. You know, because from 94 when I started, I didn't leave the police department until 2001. And 97, 98 was the zenith of the Springer show when it was the number one show in the world, you know. So here I am working on this hit show. And then I would go work as a cop for 8 hours. And there was times I'm flying all over Europe with Jerry. You know, we're going to London and Amsterdam and, you know, I'm staying in world-class hotels and flying first class. And then, you know, I'm working in the dregs, man. Like, you know, stepping on back, putting that squad car, getting cramped up for 8 hours. Freezing cold weather, holidays, weekends. So it was an interesting time of my life, to say the least.
I thought going from being a banker to being on a dating show was a big move. But being a cop serving for the public, for Jerry Springer, is the definition of literally like A to Z. In my world, what happened is those worlds collided.
Yeah.
I eventually got fired because of something that happened in my personal world.
Yeah.
Did you ever have a scenario in which you were managing 7 years of this Jerry Springer role versus cop role where your job was put into question?
Oh, yeah. I would tape from 9 to 3, but, you know, taping with Ron Long, And I was supposed to be at roll call at 4 o'clock. And it was funny because my commander and my watch commander loved the show, loved the spring show, didn't give me a hard time at all. But everybody below them gave me a hard time. So like, I come in, I check in with my lieutenant, I go, hey boss, sorry I'm late. And the sergeant would then come up to me and go, well, coach, give me a slip for an hour, because you would build up a bank of overtime. Like, you could take it in money or time. I always took time because I was making enough money on the show.
Sure.
I needed time off from the police department to go on trips with Jerry and travel and stuff. So I always took time. Well, I didn't want to give an hour of time for being, 10 minutes late because this dickhead sergeant wants 15, a slip from me. And, one time, I said, hey, man, I was so pissed. I wrote up the slip. I gave him the hour. And I said, I'll see you in the parking lot after our shift. And, that probably wasn't the wisest thing to do. But I was so mad because, people are jealous, right? And, truthfully, some of it you bring on to yourself a little bit, but not so. Like, I had a Mercedes convertible. Mm-hmm. Most cops aren't driving Mercedes convertibles. Sure. Pulling into the parking lot. I mean, other people resented. A lot of guys were like, hey, good for you. And I hired a lot of cops, show. Everybody was just a hard ticket to get. I took care of all the cops, getting tickets to the show. So a lot of guys were happy, but, other guys, they don't, just like in any field, there's jealousy. And, my life was, pretty damn good at the time, man. So, some guys tried to give me a hard time.
Did you meet that guy in the parking lot?
No, he never showed up. He never asked me for another slip again either.
There you go. All right. So 94 to 2001, you already dropped the numbers when you started as a cop, 26.5. When you left the police force, how much were you making in 2001?
I want to guess like 45 to 50.
Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Straight pay.
Yeah. Okay. So one thing we talk about often is you said you were making enough money on the show. You weren't really focused on overtime as a police officer.
I wouldn't even pick up my paychecks.
Come on.
When I was making like $250,000 on Springer.
Wow.
Being a security guy. So, back then there was no direct deposit on. You would get a check.
Sure, yeah.
Well, you'd have to go into the station to get the check. Well, I'll pick them up when next time I'm in the station, which sometimes 3 pay periods would go by, and then I'd get 3 checks. And, honestly, it just... The police check was just so, it was peanuts to me at that point. You know what I mean?
Such wild worlds. Yeah. The one thing we talked about the audience is, how do you negotiate? How do you understand your value? I'm thinking a guy like you, how the hell do you negotiate with Jerry Springer? What's the benchmark? There's not another Jerry Springer director of security. You're making $35 an hour. How do you work your way to $250K a year and beyond?
That's interesting because you're right. I had no idea. To value, I was in the military, I was in the police.
Yeah. Set.
So this is interesting. Andrew Savage, who was on Survivors.
Yeah. Yep.
He was in season 3 or 4. He was one of the first guys voted off because he was like one of those powerful dudes that they knew, like, you got to get him out of that tribe.
Yep.
Well, he was an attorney for NBC, and he was there, and I had no clue, but he kind of like, he did it for me. Like, first contract I got was for like $75,000, and then the show really like boom overnight like exploded. And then he's like, "Hey, I got you $150," and then he like got me to $250, and so like I owe him a lot because he was kind of watching out for me, and he's the kind of guy that and like I said, I didn't have an agent or I didn't even think along those lines. I still thought of myself as a cop to be in this fortunate position. And the Springer Show was my side job. Even though I was making
way more,
5 times more than what I was making as a cop, I still identified as a cop.
How many hours comparably were you working on the show versus being a police officer? Like,
so back then, we taped the Springer Show 3 days a week. So I was there from 9 in the morning till 3, 4 in the afternoon. And then I worked as a cop from 4 to midnight. And then I worked in the bars from midnight till 4 in the morning. So... I don't know how I ever saw my wife.
I was going to say.
So we spent any time together. But she did, like, sometimes come to the bar and hang out with me while I was working security because
that's cool.
Otherwise, we would have never saw each other.
Hey, wake up. New drinks just dropped at Wendy's. Cold foam, cold brew coffee, and sparkling energy. Both the caramel and the chocolate cold foam are just, so good. And the pineapple citrus and cherry limeade sparkling energy each have...
80 to 120 milligrams
of added caffeine. So whether you need a treat first thing or to just stop yawning already, mornings hit different. To pick up a new pick-me-up, gotta be Wendy's. At participating U.S. Wendy's.
Then when did rubber meet the road where you said, cop job, I'm done. Full-time Jerry Springer.
Well, that's the story I was telling you. I came home covered in blood.
That was it.
And my wife's like, you're leaving. And we got married in 2000. And then 2001, she was like, you know, and then, like I said, it was a week before September 11th. And I just had back surgery too. So I was not thrilled about thinking about sitting in a squad car for 8 hours. And here's the other thing. I worked in patrol the whole time. I didn't have any special assignment, cushy job. I was in patrol working the streets. So when I left, all of a sudden I got all these people calling me. Oh man, I would have took care of you. I could, you had 12 years to take care of me.
What the hell was that before?
Why'd you wait till I left? Like, I needed a lifeline. Cause you know, a lot of guys start out, you work in patrol and you become a detective or you get some cushy job working down in motor vehicles or some office job. I mean, you know, I liked being a street cop, but it was wearing on me too. You know, I was getting hurt and, you know, you're working 6 days on, 2 days off, you're working holidays. You know, it's not good, man. You know, so we work in weekends. So, you know, like the Springer Show, I remember like we'd have rap parties at the end of the taping season, which would end back then in June. Mm-hmm. And we'd have this big party and everybody's like, oh, I'm off for the summer. And I'm like, I got to go to work tomorrow. Like, you know, and even when I got married here, you know, my wife's making good money. I'm making good money. We got married in July and I had to go we got married on a Friday. Saturday, we went, you know, we went to the Cubs game and then, you know, all our friends, we went to the casino. Well, Sunday, I was back at work, man, working a squad car. And then I worked for like 10 days. And then we went on our honeymoon because that's when my furlough started. So then we went on vacation. Well, that's not a great life, man.
Yeah. You
know, especially when you're making, I mean, I was making more than the mayor of Chicago. You know what
that
I mean?
That is like, crazy.
So
it wasn't, and the reason I kind of brought it up again, it was never really money driven. It was more of quality of life. Quality of life. Okay.
And knowing that once the Springer Show was over, I'm not sticking around probably in Chicago anyways. So what's the point?
Got it.
I wasn't going to get a pension either way.
All right, so we're going to get into the next steps for Steve here. But before we do that, when it comes to the Jerry Springer Show, we already talked about negotiation. You leave full-time. You're working there full-time. We talk a lot about annual reviews and annual raises. What the hell does an annual review at Jerry Springer look like? Like, how do they determine what success is and how to get a raise?
I didn't have the job where I got reviewed. You know what I mean? Because I was considered talent. I had a talent contract.
Gotcha.
So I wasn't like an employee, mm-hmm. you know, like everybody else was. I eventually got a talent contract and because I was on TV and so much and all that. So I never got really reviewed. I mean, it was so crazy because one time the producer, this big fat guy was on stage, right? And the producer goes like this, meaning pull his pants down. So I pulled his pants down. Well, unbeknownst to us, he didn't have any underwear on.
Oh, jeez.
So he stand in front of 250 people with his ding-a-ling showing, and he ended up suing us. And the lawyers come in, and I got a reprimand. It's the only time on the show they gave me this written warning. And I'm like, wait a second, man. I'm doing what the boss told me to do.
Yeah.
But, you know, I kind of knew that thing, like, I better just keep my mouth shut,
take it,
and move on from there. But that's the only time I ever really got in trouble on the show.
Okay. Interesting. Yeah. Well, you get reprimanded and then it's all uphill from you. So another thing we have in common, my fiance went on Dancing with the Stars. She won in 2020. Jerry Springer goes on Dancing with the Stars.
That's how I got my show.
And that's how you got your show, right? So tell everybody that doesn't know what opportunity came about when Jerry went on Dancing with the Stars.
So that was kind of like back then, I really don't keep up with things, but like back then Dancing with Stars was a new show and it was huge, and, you know, people that were on Dancing with Stars was like, could give you a big career boost. So Jerry was doing it. This is 2005. Yeah, this is 2005. And so they said, he's terrible, like, dancer. I don't know if Jerry could dance or not. I spent the last 13 years of my life with him, but I had no idea if he could dance or not. But I didn't even ask him. So he's going to do it. And they come to me and they said, well, we can't really shut the production. We don't want to shut the production of the show down while he's gone. So you'll host that week of shows. He'll be voted off first and he'll come back. So you'll do it for a week. And it's funny because I said, well, I talked to the company lawyer and I said, well, what am I going to get paid for that? And they're like, paid? What do you mean? I go, what do you mean? I said, I'm not a talk show host. I'm director of security. And they didn't want to pay me anything.
Interesting.
And I said, well, then I'm not doing it.
Get out of here.
And they're like, this is your opportunity. And back then I thought it was all bullshit. Like, you know, I'm never going to. Like, why would I get a show?
Yeah,
you know
what
I mean?
Come on.
So I said, well, no, then I'm not doing it. And I really meant it. Like, no, man. You know, like we would work on Jerry Springer uncensored tapes. Well, the company's making all this money.
Sure.
We're not getting a dime of it.
Yeah.
So I put my foot down. I go, I'm not doing anything that is not my job, and you're not going to pay me. So they came back, and I think they paid me a couple $1,000 every show that I host on top of my pay.
Okay.
You know, so they're going
to. What, well, did you get a base pay? You said on top of your pay. What
right,
was
so
it?
I was
just
getting
base
like,
pay?
At that time, I was making like $250,000.
Okay. And then it's $1,000
per show. So now they're going to give me $2,000 for every show I host.
Got it.
Well, you would tape 2 shows a day. 3 days a week. So it was like an extra $6,000 a week. Wait, 2, 4, 6, 8, 12. No, it's more.
Yeah.
It's $12,000.
Yeah.
It was a nice chunk of change. So the lawyer goes to me, he goes, well, did you talk to the executive producer at the time? I said, I don't need to talk to anybody. You pay me or get somebody else. Knowing there is nobody else. Because he goes, I go, listen, if you brought anybody else in the host of the show, you'd have to pay him, right? He goes, yeah. I go, well, I'm somebody else.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Well, like, and knowing what you know now, they probably would have to pay him more than $1,000 a show.
Yeah, exactly.
Right?
But, you know, again, not having a lawyer, not having an agent, and Andrew Savage was long gone at this point, you know.
Okay.
So, you know, I'm kind of doing my own thing. Okay. So I do the shows. Boom. Jerry's doing another week of shows. Boom. I'm doing the shows. 3 weeks go by. 4 weeks go by. 5 weeks go by. I'm doing all these shows. When these shows air, the ratings are really good. They thought maybe they're going to go down.
Sure.
They didn't go down. Some even went up. So when Jerry gets back, he's like, hey, Steve, will you do Monday shows? And I'm like, as long as I'm getting that pay, yeah. So he would occasionally take Mondays off. Well, the next season came around. He's like, hey, can you do Monday shows? Because, you know, Jerry's very big star at that time. He's got other things going. So, yeah, no problem. Well, then somebody's light bulb went off. See, a lot of people want to take credit for me. Oh, Steve's a big star. Bullshit. That's the biggest lie ever told. The fact that the ratings went up and I'm doing these shows, any moron could say, this guy should be given an opportunity.
Sure.
He's hosting a show. The ratings are good when he hosts it. So all these people that want to take credit for me, discover me, that's crazy. I mean, I was a security guard that this fluke of nature break in life. And so I did get a phone call. And I was like, you know, it was like a Sunday night, I want to say. And I'm watching All in the Family. I'm drinking a vodka tonic. My wife's in bed. My kids are sleeping. I get this phone call, and I thought somebody was screwing around. Oh, this is so-and-so from NBC. We're giving you your own show. And I thought it was one of my friends screwing around. But it turned out it's the real deal. I go up to my wife. I wake her up. I go, I got my own TV show. And we, you know, there was always talk about it, you know. But we said, you know, who's going to give me a show? So we always said, no way. But then she's like, oh, my God, are you drunk? And I said, no, I'm not drunk. It really happened.
Too many vodka tonics.
But then it was like, this realization, like, oh, my God, I'm going to do, what am I going to do? You know what I mean?
Like shit.
Yeah, like now we got to come up with some kind of concept or, you know. You know, it's like when you watch old Seinfeld. Oh, Jerry, we like to be in business.
Yep.
Well, what kind of show do you want to do? You know, how about if I work in an antique store? You know, like, you know, that's
kind of,
right. Like, so, but then, you know, my wife really was the one who said, listen, man, you're a cop. You know, you deal with people on the streets and we're going to do stories that you know. So she really came up with the concept of the show.
The creative. Know? Wow. Yeah. All right. Stay tuned to the recap. We're going to talk a little bit about ratings. I have some friends in the producer world, and it is crazy these days how they can see to the second how ratings are being increased and decreased based on what's happening. So there's numbers behind those decisions. question for you I have that I think anyone at home in any job or the relationship could probably take away from. You got the opportunity to host the show, Jerry Springer. Ratings went up. You did something that connected with the audience. What do you think it was that you did that allowed you to connect with this community and increase ratings while the
well, main guys I think, you know, I was kind of like the protector on the Springer show. Like, I broke up the fights. I stopped people from basically beating the shit out of each other. And, you know, and people knew I was a policeman, you know. So I think people looked at me as, and when we started doing these segments before I got my own show called Steve to the Rescue, where they sent me out to people's like towns and I'd get them out of trouble or some bad situation. So I think people liked that. Like, you know, they felt like, oh, wow, Steve's somebody I could turn to. And I've always said it, like when people, if I'm somewhere, you know, out in public in the airport, people come up to me. It's not like they're meeting Brad Pitt, you know, he's going crazy. But they're, you know, kind of happy, and they're like almost meeting somebody that they've known for a long time. They're real comfortable. They like the everyday guy, you know, like I'm your neighbor. I'm the policeman on the street. I'm your friend. So I think there's that connection with the people at home. And I think that's what my success has been.
Something about the relatability factor is huge. Guys, if you haven't seen the Steve Wilkos show, it has been on for 15 years now. You can find it on Instagram, Twitter, TikTok, Facebook, collectively over 6 million followers on all those. So go check it out. If someone's listening to this and they haven't seen the show, how would you summarize for the listener that's never seen your show?
It's about getting the truth, man. And people that have nowhere else to turn, they're the last line of defense for them. They come on the show and we get them the truth. It's a hard-hitting show. It's a show we deal with a lot of hard topics, but it's, like I said, it's people, we get justice for people.
Okay, and they call you 15 years ago and tell you you're going to give you this job. You're going to be the host of your show. Realistically, did you think you'd be here 15 years from now premiering season 16?
No, because I seriously thought, even do I want to do this? Because, you know, when you go, most new shows fail. I mean, that's... Mm-hmm. And I saw that, like, from the time I started working at Springer until I got my own show. I mean, you know, remember the girl from The Cosby Show? She got a show. And, you know, Danny Bonaducci and Richard Bay, just like tons of people. I mean, more than I can ever remember, people getting TV shows and getting canceled.
Sure. So
I'll never forget, when I got my show, I was in L.A., had to do the big press junket, and people were laughing at me. I mean, they're like... Back then, it was 13 weeks. It wasn't even a year option, you know. And they're like, you're not going to last 13 weeks. And I've never failed at anything in my life. I mean, I've done stupid things.
Sure.
But I've never, like, when I joined the Marine Corps, guys I knew from my neighborhood didn't make it. They came home and their heads were shaved and they're like, not Marines. Mm-hmm. Like, you don't go, you're not going to make it. I go, I'm making it.
Mm-hmm.
Then people are like, you won't get on the police department. I'm getting on the police department. So when people are like, you're going to fail in the first 13 weeks, I go, I don't know how long I'm going to last, but I'm going to last past 13 weeks. I can't tell you that. And, you know, so, and here's the thing. I've always worked hard. I'm not that guy that half-ass. I can't half-ass anything.
Yeah.
Like, there's times I come to the show, I'm like, I don't feel like it. I go, I don't care about today. But then I hit that stage, and it's like, I can't even not, you know, like, I get so invested into it. And so, and I tell people all the time, you don't get to where I'm at half-assing it or being lazy. And I am lazy in my personal life, but my professional life, I'm not lazy. You know what I mean? Like, I work really hard at what I do. And I've did travel to every market in the country and do every interview and, you know, promote the show and do, like, even today. Today's my day off. I'm here shooting digital stuff all day long. I could say, no, I don't want to do it, but I do it because I know it's good for the show, you know? So... You know, you got to bust your ass to be a success in this world.
I saw the cheese boards out there. He's definitely on TikTok trends. Impressive. I'm not even on those trends. Real quick, was there any animosity from Jerry when you got this opportunity, or was it met with support?
Listen, man, Jerry, I love that man, and I think he loves me, and we've been friends for 28 years now, and there's never been animosity. That guy, we've never had an unkind word for each other. I mean, he's the best. He's been nothing but good and generous and kind, and I can't say not one. I mean, this is a guy that's never yelled at anybody since I've known the man. Like, you think about celebrities, like, Remember Steve Harvey sent out that crazy email about, don't come up to me, you know.
Don't look at Ellen has all Ellen, these you know, things. Like, I mean, the list goes on.
Right, you know, people like, you know, and he never, not, you know, he was the biggest star in the world at one time.
Yeah.
He was the biggest star in the world. And that guy doesn't ask for anything special. Give me, you know, hamburger, you know, for,
you know,
like, he's just great, man. And like, I never saw any, and I'm sure maybe there was times I did something that probably annoyed him. He didn't let me know.
Okay. Interesting. I love it. I love that he supported you. Sounds like an awesome guy. You talked a little about your compensation on that show. I don't know if you can share or not, but how has your life changed from a compensation standpoint, not being the director of security, but being the host of the Steve Wilkins Show?
Listen, I make a lot more than when I was on the Spring Show. And at the Spring Show, then they also gave me the voiceover work. So, you know, like coming up next on Springer, well, that's $100,000 a year. So I was making like $350,000.
Oh,
you know,
sick.
So
while you got your own show, you're doing voiceover, making money from Springer.
Well, no, I'm saying when I was on Springer.
Oh, okay. When you were on
Springer. So after a couple of years went by, they cut the guy out that was doing it and they gave it to me.
Got it.
So now I'm making my base out of $250,000. I'm doing $100,000. So at the time, I think I was making like $365,000.
Okay. Yeah.
When they offered me the show, they came in to me with $350,000 to do. I go, that's less than what I'm making now. Like, they had no idea.
I'm not taking a pay cut to my own show.
I'm like, you don't think they're going to offer me like $1 million, you know? Yeah. Like, $350,000, I'm like, that's less than I make now. They didn't even know, man. Like, sometimes it's so crazy. So how it's changed my life now, not a lot is the question.
Yeah.
Do I live a very comfortable lifestyle because of the money? Yes. I own a couple homes, but my life didn't change that much because I was, you know, when you're making, like I said, $350,000 and my wife was making, you know, probably around that neighborhood. So together, and this was, you know, during the mid 2000s, that was a lot of money.
Yeah.
And we didn't live like, you know, we're not like rappers or, you know, Jersey Shore people spending all their money. No, I mean, we bought a nice little condo and we made money on it. Like, we bought things that appreciated. We didn't buy a lot of appreciable assets.
I love that. That's a great lesson right there.
Yeah. And even the first time we said because then when we got married, I started buying apartment buildings in Chicago because, you know, I was like, got to have something to fall back on.
Sure.
And the first time we ever bought anything that was, we considered a depreciable asset, which it really wasn't, was a lake house in Wisconsin. And now that thing's
blown up,
you know, probably triple what I paid for it, you know. But we bought that, and that was the first after my season one of my show. And I still own it, and I love that place. It's like my solitude of fortress, like Superman. And I remember sitting in my yard, a big yard, you know, right by the water, and my buddy Scott Pritchard, who he's a friend of mine, but I met him like to be like a groundskeeper at my house, like, because I'm not there a lot. I remember telling him, boy, if I could hold on to this property for 3 or 4 years, you know, if I could just get 3 or 4 years out of my show, maybe I could hold on to it. But now, you know, everything in my life is paid for. I have no debt. You know, every house I own is paid for, car, nothing. I have no debt. My kids' college is salted away. So that's the how it maybe changed my life, is that no mortgages, no debt.
I love it. I just, Steve, your story is awesome. Like, you're making $22 an hour as a cop. They ask you to put on a tie for $35 an hour. You're like, sure, do whatever you want. Then they pay you $250. You don't negotiate. They want you in the hosting role, and you start to say, I know my value, pay up. Right. Now you got your own show, and from $35 to saying, yeah, throw a tie and pulls people's pants down, I'm in. $350,000 for my own show, fuck off. Let's talk.
Right.
let's negotiate.
Well, and at that point, I ended up getting an agent.
Yeah,
he's been my agent for the past 16 years. So.
It's amazing. Yeah. It's an amazing story.
When you get to this position, you have to have an agent, just because it's not just base pay. Now you're talking about profit sharing and, you know, gross revenue and all this stuff, digital. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's so complicated. And I actually had to hire contract lawyers and everything else to, you know, get where I'm at. So yeah, at this point, there's no more negotiating my own.
And I think that's a lesson for everyone. Partner up with the people that know best. Steve did it as his career grew, and that's a huge takeaway. If you guys haven't seen, again, go check out the Steve Wilkos Show on all social media platforms, and it's on NBC. Before we get your trading secret, I have the listeners. They're called the Money Mafia. They have some curiosity questions from those that know all about you. So I'm going to do a quick rapid fire on some of those. Do guests get paid to go on the show?
No. Now, we'll get compensated if they can prove like they're missing a day of work or something.
Yeah.
We try to compensate them for that. Or if they hired hire like, you know, somebody watched their kids for a day. But we don't pay. Because if you paid people, they would make up stories and become professional guests.
Okay.
So, and listen, if you look at most of our stories, you probably Google search them and it's a legal situation where they're at right now. You know what I mean? They've been arrested or they're in some kind of adjudicating some, you know, case. So our stories are 100% real.
That was the second question the Money Mafia had. Are any of these stories fabricated or lies? And you're saying these are all based on legitimate things.
But it's interesting you say that. Just real quick. We did a story in the last couple of weeks, and I walked off stage and I asked my wife, I go, is that story real?
Wow.
And she goes, yeah, I was wondering the same thing. And we offered them to take lie detector tests, and I think we might air in it or if it hasn't aired already. And the one came back telling the truth. The other one came back inconclusive because I think there was drugs involved or something. So even when I thought it was fake, I said, let's ask them to take another lie detector test to make sure the story's real. And I think it passed.
That's awesome. Yeah. Guys, just that clip, I'm telling you, if you see this stuff on social media, go take a break from your day. Check out the Steve Wilkos Show. These clips are unbelievable. It's just like such a great break from the day. The Money Mafia want to know how much impact you as a host get on the whole production and creative
Zero.
And things like that.
I know my place because I know a lot of talk show hosts. And now if you look at the credits on the show, they have me listed as executive producer. I couldn't produce my way out of a wet paper bag. Now, I'm in a very fortunate position of my wife being my executive producer. She's the best executive producer in TV. And I think if you talk to most people in the business, there's not a lot of people that would dispute that. She took a nobody and made me a success. She turned the Jerry Springer Show in the mid-2000s when it was sinking, reversed the trend and kept Jerry on the air for 10, 15 more years. I stay out of the producer's way. Now, I read three newspapers a day, and I'll see a story that I want to do, and I'll say, hey, can we try to get this? Mm-hmm. But other than that, I get the hell out of the way. And there's stories I don't want to do. Like, my wife's like, okay, we're doing this. I'm like, I don't want to do that. But I've learned now just to do it because she's usually right, and the story rates really well. So as far as the production of the show, and when hosts become where they want to get really involved with their show, that usually doesn't work out too well.
Yep. I think, again, that's another lesson people could apply to no matter what your job is.
Stay in your lane.
Stay in your lane and do it best. Yeah. All right. 15 years, 16 season just premiered. What's next for the show? What can we expect?
You know, we do a show that nobody else is doing. When you watch daytime TV, everybody's doing celebrity-driven, movie, book, song. We're doing real-life stories that people are involved in every day. We're kind of out on our own little island. Nobody's coming after us, you know. Jennifer Hudson's coming out, but now she's got to compete against Kelly Clarkson. And, you know, we got, I don't know who's the other new show that just came out. Oh, we even got Caramo now, who's taking over for Maury. And, you know, he's more, I would say, I haven't really seen his show, but I think it with us and like Maury and Jerry, we have our own little niche. Mm-hmm. And with our show where we do the lie detector test and we get to hard-hitting stories and stories about abuse, nobody else is doing that story. Nobody in daytime TV is doing it. So we don't have to compete with anybody. If you want to watch, you know, all these shows with celebrities, you got a million to pick from. When you want to watch a show about everyday people in tough situations, you watch my show.
You watch the Steve Wilkos Show. Steve, this has been amazing. Your career journey is unbelievable. Never say never. Extremely unconventional and successful. We got to leave with a trading secret. Trading secret someone couldn't find in a textbook, a classroom, or Google about life, money management, or career management. What can you leave us with?
I'll say this. You know, people, ever since I've been in TV, say, you're real lucky. And I am real lucky. But I always tell young people, luck does not find you laying on the couch. Okay. I hustled. When I was going to be a cop, and I was very, very fine being a cop. And But I hustled. I bought property. I saved up money to buy buildings. I never spent money on things that, again, like I said earlier, that didn't appreciate. I didn't buy things that depreciated. I bought things that appreciated. And I never said no to an opportunity. I hustled. I worked all these side jobs. And that's why Mike asked me to work the Jerry Springer Show. He knew I was a guy that said, hey, you want to work security? I was going to say yes. I wasn't going to be that guy, well, I'm golfing tomorrow. I got this tomorrow. No, $35 an hour, I'm there. So I tell people all the time, you got to make your own luck. You got to make your own breaks. And if you're sitting at home watching TV or laying in your backyard tanning or, you know, those are nice things to do. But if you have an opportunity to do something else to get ahead, you do it because you never know where that opportunity is going to lead. And like I said, one day working a security job, I've got my own TV show. I was a cop. I have a talk show that's been on for 16 years. I met my wife. I have my kids, all because of the Jerry Springer Show. I live an incredibly nice, comfortable life. I've gotten to do things, met celebrities. I met all my childhood heroes, Mike Tyson, Ernie Banks, Pete Rose, everybody in the sports world I've met. I've gotten to go to Kentucky Derby. I've gone to, you know, the Indianapolis 500. I've been to Amsterdam, London, all these different countries because of the show, because of being in TV. And that's because I said, yes, I will work that gig tomorrow.
I love, and it's a hell of a trading secret. It's a testament to you being here. Your work ethic as a cop, then you do Jerry Springer, then you would go do night shifts at bars 24/7. And today on your day off, you're doing this, cheese board challenges and more. It's a testament to you, Steve. Where can people find you in the show if they need more Steve Wilkos in their life?
Well, we're on Facebook at the Steve Wilkos Show, Twitter at Steve Wilkos TV, Instagram at the Steve Wilkos Show, YouTube at the Steve Wilkos Show, and TikTok at the Steve Wilkos. Just go to stevewilkosshow.com, check your local listings. We're all over the country. You'll just find, you know, where we are in your time.
Check it out. If you need a release from life, I'm telling you, it's unbelievable entertainment. Another episode of Trading Secrets you can't afford to miss. Steve, thank you for being with us.
Thanks for having me on.
Ding, ding, ding. Oh, we are closing in the bell to the one, the only Steve Wilkos. I'm laughing my ass off right now because we have an unbelievable recap here. Not only do I have the Curious Canadian with me, but I have the Low Show, Lo Von Rumpf, with me. And he's very sensitive to big noises. And when I said ding, 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 he literally almost...
I have an iron deficiency. I think that's why I'm sensitive to noises.
Why do you blame
that? Medical
that?
Condition.
You blame it on an iron deficiency.
Need iron. My doctor was like, you should like get scared easy. You spook easy. Okay, there it is.
There we go. All right, he does spook easy.
What am I? Curious Canadian? What am I? Mysterious Mexican?
Yeah. What do you want to be, Lo?
I don't know. Something good. Something like the, I don't know, like the something like, what's something with like gay? Like,
some, like Dildo Dave?
Jesus. Okay.
I said that because he's been telling me he's a big dildo guy.
That's a trading secret right off the press right there.
That's Lo's trading secret. He's okay. Iron deficient and he's dildo
Dave. He loves a dildo.
He calls it David because, wow, we have the Curious Canadian Dave here. That's, see the full moment there?
There it is.
All right. We have the Curious Canadian with us too. All right. Let's get back to business. Sorry for that, guys. Steve Wilkos, former cop. Turned Jerry Springer security, turned massive, massive host. David, give me your initial thoughts, and then we'll kick it over to the mysterious Lo. What do you? What should we call
mysterious
it?
Mexican?
We'll call you M squared.
Oh, the M squared, or like I don't know. I'm trying to think of something.
What starts like the with curious money?
The Curious Canadian. The da da da.
How about the luscious Lo?
I'll take the luscious Lo.
Okay, we got the luscious Lo. Good. If you guys think of a better name for the recap guest here, Lo, give us 5 stars and make sure you tell us. 5 stars, put it in the reviews, and what should Lo's name be for recaps moving forward? David, talk to me. What'd you think?
Well, when Steve Wilkos' name entered the group chat and you said, does anyone know who this guy is? And I freaked out because I remember watching Jerry Springer back in the day, like with the cable TV before the internet, and Steve like was the security guard and people chanted Steve in the crowd. Like, I'm a Steve Wilkos guy through and through. So to hear a little bit more about his story, I thought was really, really cool. I got to bring this back full circle, seeing Lo again. He got the opportunity to have his own show when Jerry went on Dancing with the Stars. you guys started your bromance during Dancing with the Stars when KB was on during lockdown in LA. It's a big elephant brain memory there by me.
Yeah.
It's good to see you guys together, though. It's good to see you guys back in
that
back.
Was a Jay. Great little circle back.
Yes, David. I know.
Unbelievable. Well this, thought out.
This specific time, though, I look back and Instagram reminds me of like 1 year, 2 years ago. And it keeps, Jay keeps popping up in my life. And so it's been great.
It's been a good 2 years. Yeah. And actually Trading Secrets, the like early start of Trading Secrets really began in COVID.
So I remember when he was like, I'm thinking of starting a podcast. It's going to be about secrets, trading them, industry stuff. And I was like, don't do it. No. I was like, no, I was all about it. He's like, we're going to talk money. And it was just an idea, a concept. And then now look where you're at. How exciting. Congratulations to both of you. This is awesome.
Well, thank you.
There's so much money being made on this podcast, thousands of dollars. And it's really cool to just be here right now.
Wow.
Full circle.
And guess what, love? Trading Secret, we will not be paying you as a recap code. All right. So back to Steve Wilkos. Yeah. So we have a group chat. I'll always throw like, all right, this is who we just have booked. And I want to see their reaction because sometimes people have no idea, especially in our group.
I didn't know who he was.
It's four people. He's huge on social media. He is massive. And when they talked about Jerry Springer used to be literally bigger than Oprah back in the day. And when I tell some of the older generation people I had still Steve Wilkos on, they lose their shit.
Wow.
I couldn't believe when he said it was the biggest show in the world at the time. They were flying over to Europe and doing live shows. They were sending limos out and sending limos out for the security guards to come to the show. I couldn't believe how big it was.
Yeah.
Back in the day.
He's also we've had some people with some big followings come on this podcast. He is one of the largest followed individual we have. Millions and millions and millions of followers. Like he kills it, not only just on a show with an older demographic, but in social media too. You seem like you were like a Jerry Springer guy though.
No, wasn't.
No?
I wasn't familiar with Steve. I remember him kind of briefly, like once I saw him, I was like, oh, he was on Jerry Springer. What's he doing now? What's the show going to be about? Turns out, very successful. The guy's killing it. I didn't know anything going into it. So I was a blank slate. But I briefly remember him on Jerry Springer. But I wasn't a big Jerry Springer. I was an Oprah person.
Gotcha. You're an Oprah person. We're going to go to the Curious Canadian to get his questions about what questions you have from the episode. And then I want to go to you, to the Luscious Low, to see what questions you have, Luscious Low. Before I kick it over to David, though, I got to ask you, if you were to, like, and give us a trading secret about your life events connected to Steve Wilkos and Jerry Springer and the Steve Wilkos show. If there was one event in your life that would have sparked a good episode on Jerry Springer or Steve Wilkos, what would it be?
Oh, wow. Oh, my God. Well, I've signed NDAs with clients, but I've been in a chokehold from a couple clients.
But like you, like low.
Well,
like,
it was happening to me.
Wow.
But like that would be a great Jerry Springer. I'm thinking of like a trash moment where you're like, whoa, that was not me in a good place.
Like your wife cheated on you with the stylist.
Oh, that time I almost slept with my cousin. That would be a great, Jerry Springer episode. Cause that's like, they love stuff like that little incest moment. Yeah. And
how'd that like,
I didn't even know it was my cousin. They're everywhere. The Von Rumps, by the way, it's like 10% German, 90% Mexicano. So I just false advertisement here. But anyway, the Von Rumps are everywhere. There's so many of them. I have 17 on my father's side, over 63 cousins. And so one of them I found attractive, had no idea it was my cousin. And we met on an app. Wow. One thing leads to another. I'm sucking dick. I'm kidding. I wasn't. I did. Can you imagine? I didn't. I would never. But I realized that we were cousins.
How did you find out?
Well, we looked alike. And when he had messaged me, I was like, wow. The narcissist side of me, I was like, super cute. He's tan, over 6 foot.
Like me.
Yeah. And I was like, has a good set of chompers. And I was like, okay, I'm into it. And then he started telling me about his, like, oh, I'm in San Diego. I don't want to like give too much because he could be listening. That would be so uncomfortable. Yeah. But anyway.
What's his name? We'll go search him.
Well, he has the same last name as me. But anyway, I knew when he was like, oh yeah, I'm here visiting my parents. Yeah. And then he said his parents are here. And then I was like, oh cool. Did you grow up here? And then he mentioned his dad, sent a picture of his family. I was like, there's my uncle. And and his dad looks just like my dad. And so anyway, once he sent a picture of his dick too. And it just asked, but it's also gay app. Oh God, there's a lot to unpack here. But when he sent it, I was like, his dick looked identical to mine.
Wow.
Same butthole, same dick. I was like, could have been mine. Anyway, I blocked him immediately. I blocked him immediately because I freaked out and he's in the closet. And anyway.
And if I was Steve Wilco, I would, first of all, love this episode.
Thank you.
Be the highlight. You'd be prime time. You would end your introduction with that. And I would say, in today, what luscious low doesn't know is we have lie detector tests set up. We're going to find out what really happened. Did he actually block him? So stay tuned to the final episode. We will let you know. All right. That is Lowe's Luscious Lowe's entire episode, which would definitely get millions of viewers. David, any thoughts on that before you have any questions on the podcast?
Well, no, I'm just picturing like if any of our viewers are hitting like fast forward in the episode and then like they get right into some of those comments that Lowe is making, wondering like what button they hit to get on a different episode of the podcast.
Like,
so
wow, I went to like the gay version of Call Her Daddy today.
Yeah.
Sucking cousin dick.
Wow.
What happened to Trading Secrets? Like, guys, don't give us one
That's
star
the new
for this.
Secret. Anyway.
All right, David.
Oh no. So if I have to do my my voice of the viewer, Curious Canadian, for those who are still with us, to try and get some definitions defined. Steve talked quickly about he would never make it 20 years in the Marine Corps to get his pension. He was 8 years away from getting his pension as a police officer. I know what a pension is. It's a form of a retirement fund or you know, income that you receive when you retire from working in one of these places. Are pensions one and the same? Are they the same type of money percentage-wise? Can you kind of explain pensions and give us a feel of some different kinds?
Yeah, I'm going to give you very, very high level. The reason I'm going to give you high level is because I bet you, and if you do, if you have a pension, please let us know. I'm curious, especially go to the reviews, 5 stars, let us know. But pensions really don't exist anymore. It's very, very rare, unless you're in like a government job, that pensions exist. They used to be a huge benefit for employees, and employers would use pensions as means to recruit employees and retain them. So the big thing about pensions is there is defined pensions, and then there's defined contributions. So there's defined benefit where you'll know exactly how much you will get, either a lump sum or an annual payment once you retire. First thing I think about when I think about a defined benefit plan is like a police officer. When you put in your years as a police officer, you know exactly when you retire how much you'll get. Even as a teacher, when you put in years as a teacher, especially in like New York State, you know that you will get a percentage of your, there's a whole equation. It's like a percentage of your highest salary ever earned for the rest of your life, X amount of years. So that is defined benefit plan. Then there's contribution plan where based on your years of service, the employer will contribute to the fund. And then when you retire based on your years worked, you'll get a portion of that. So that's like very, very high level.
Have you ever been in a job, worked a job where pension was a possibility?
Never have had a job or been offered a pension in any capacity.
Same.
What about you, Lo?
Never.
But like back, like big in unions, big in government work, teacher work.
I was. Yeah, when I worked for Geneseo's.
See, there you go. State University. That makes sense.
25 years, I was going to get 60% of my last three, the average of my last 3 years'
salary.
See,
there's usually an equation like that. Yeah, but you would have to put 25 years in.
Yeah, I lasted 3. So not quite pension.
22, and I think for cops in New York State, it's 20 years. So it's all different.
I think so.
Yeah. Okay. That's a good question. Okay. Before we kick it to your next question, do you have any comments on pension plans?
No. No comment on pensions.
P-E-N-S-I-O-N.
Yeah.
That's pretty good.
Good.
All right. I got a question for you too. Speaking of old workplaces, you talk about rubber meets the road, when the rubber met the road for him, when he came home with a bloody shirt. And that was the end of his days.
Because he killed someone.
Police officer. Well, yeah, as a police officer.
You can't make things up on Trading Secrets.
Well, that's what it seemed
like. Sounded like he got in a fight.
Oh, I don't know.
Sicko.
I went right
this
to...
This is a guy who watches murder documentaries on repeat.
I wish you would have dived a little bit because I wanted to know, like, the blood on his shirt. Like, that was his coming to Jesus moment to leave. But I was like, whose blood was it?
Isn't that wild how our brains tick differently? Like, you went right into
the crime
scene.
Who
did you kill? I went into like,
how was your pension? What's your pension looking like after that? But, I was like, I was dying to know like whose blood, what happened? That's a huge moment, climactic moment in your life where you're covered in blood coming home and your wife's like, oh my God, honey, like it's done. That's what his wife was like. You're done. He's like, I'm done, babe. Jerry Springer all the way now.
I think it was probably just a little roughhousing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Take it as that.
I did see a meme the other day where it was like watching scary Halloween movies that I know are totally fake, and it's like under the covers can barely see, and then it was like peacefully sleeping, like watching my 30th murder, true life murder documentary to put me to sleep, and it was like all calm.
I love it.
But he had the Rubber Meets the Road from that. Yeah. You had Rubber Meet the Road when you got fired from the bank for the comment you made on the podcast. I was curious, did you get any settlement or severance from the bank?
Just to,
what's that?
Kate, well, you said he made it. Didn't Caitlin make the?
Yeah, it was actually.
Caitlin made a comment about Jason, and it was like a sexual thing.
It was like our first hookup.
Yeah.
Stuff.
Oh yeah.
That story. Yes, yeah. Yes. And then that comment got me fired. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
So did Caitlin's comment on a podcast that got you fired get you any like settlement, severance, anything like that? You walk away with a bag from that or no?
How much money did you get?
So contractually, I can't speak to that.
Is that for life? Is that a 10-year contract? We got to say it on the 1,007th episode. Like, what's going on with
that? So, I mean, I guess maybe what we could do is go through the contract that I signed, which probably answers your question you just asked. And then I would have to see what the liability of speaking about that would be and if it's worth it or not.
Hmm. See, this is the boring part of reading contracts is that you actually know you can't speak about. Whereas, like,
well, that's
from 90% of the people who don't read their contracts, they can just...
Well, if I were to actually get a severance, then what would happen is you would usually sign a contract. And the reason they're in a situation like this, the reason they would ever pay you a severance is so you didn't talk about it. So it's really one of the only value adds they have is you not speaking to it. So read through the lines, curious Canadian, come up with your, let's do this. Because I can't technically say, based on my answer or based on your question and you knowing me so well, what do you think the answer is? Why don't you both take predictions? So we're big on predictions in the recaps.
I think that
yes
you got
or no,
at least,
and how much? Just take predictions. I'm not going to react.
I think you absolutely did get something, and knowing, have an idea of what your salary was and the severance and the time of year, I think you got $100,000.
Okay.
I think that you didn't get any money, and knowing you, you wanted to go in the ring and fight. And so because you didn't, then you fought them. Maybe a lawsuit took place, a little gag order for you. You can't speak on it. And so, I think you ultimately did, but they probably initially said, absolutely not. Adios.
Great, great guesses. What we do is we will have a Jason Tells All episode at the end of the year where I talk about all the money made in 2022, all the money lost, every story. I will commit to the viewers out there, the money mafia, that what I will do is I will go through the contract. I'll talk to my attorney. I'll ask him what the actual liability of me talking about this is.
I'm dying to
know. If it's too high, I won't talk about it.
That better be juicy. It better be juicy for all this secretive on the Trading Secrets portion of the tell-all.
Let's keep this recap going. What else we got?
All right. Last question I got. His trading secret, he says, luck doesn't find you on the couch, which is bad news for me because I spend way too much time on the couch. But secondly, he said, I only buy things that appreciate, never depreciate. And as I'm trying to think of a list of things that appreciate, it kind of ends at like house. So if I'm smart as Steve Wilkos, let's go around the room here and I'll kind of say items that we think are that appreciate that we would buy as maybe as an investment.
I like that. Who wants to start?
I'll start.
Okay, you. Go low.
How about a Rolex watch?
That is definitely an appreciating asset.
Yeah, appreciate.
Limited supply right now. The retail price is much lower than the secondary market. And when the boom was off the charts, when we were really crushing about a year ago, the market, those watches were going for like 2, 3, 4, sometimes even 5 times the retail price.
Okay.
So that was a beautiful answer, Lowe.
Designer clothes, depending on the designer.
You could answer this better than anyone.
Yeah. Well, so designer clothes.
Tell us, give us a list of a couple designers in which, in general, not like every single piece, in general, it will actually appreciate.
Well, it depends. Like if their life ends tragically, like Alexander McQueen, who hung himself with an Alexander McQueen iconic scarf.
No way.
That last collection he did, the Atlantis collection, I mean, the value, you can't even put a price on it. A lot of those pieces have been donated to the museum. But if you have your hands on any sort of piece from that specific collection, because he's not here anymore, it's like if a famous athlete, singer, and artist, this is one of the most creative geniuses that will ever walk this planet. And so his collection, completely appreciated. So it depends on the designer. You know, Kanye's in some hot water right now. Maybe his shit will depreciate, appreciate. I don't know. But there's certain designers, like Gianni Versace, original Gianni Versace pieces have appreciated in value.
Interesting.
Triple, quadruple the value.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, he's gone. He was shot. And so sometimes these artists have tragic lives, and it's nice to get your hands on some of these beautiful pieces.
Yeah, yeah.
If you're a fan of the art of fashion,
sure,
and style.
Those are really good examples. I would say Kanye's portfolio is definitely getting depreciating, yeah,
taking
as
a bit
it
of a
should.
Hit right now.
Anti-Semitic.
I know.
Anyway, the one that I love, they said Alexander McQueen's great. The Rolex one is a great one. And then I had another thought on the ship. I lost my thought. This is where I was going to go. When you talked about the museum, it's actually amazing how much Lowe knows about resale of certain things. Like we were talking about the Jeffrey Dahmer, Jeffrey Dahmer Jesus. Netflix. He knows, like, his little drawings get sold for like, yeah, tens of thousands of dollars. His original glasses, how much did you say they got sold for?
Well, they're actually on sale or for sale now.
If you
check out like Murderpedia, I spend a lot of time there. But his glasses are going for around $200,000.
Wow.
Yeah. And they're not the original ones that he wore during all of his murders in the 90s, but they're the ones that he wore in his jail cell before he was killed. He wasn't executed.
Wow.
He was killed. So they're his actual glasses anyway.
All right, let's keep the list going. David, do you have any others?
Is like sports memorabilia? Does that count?
I think for some of comic books for some Pokemon cards, sports memorabilia.
Okay, I noticed in your jewelry box you have a bunch of Pokemon cards.
Yeah, I love Pokemon cards.
Really?
Yeah, I have like old school ones too. Yeah, I used to collect them when I was a kid.
So did I.
Really?
Got to catch them all.
Wow, every one of them.
I loved them.
It's unbelievable. All right, let me give you some other ones. Obviously, like land, fine art. What's really cool, there's wine. You can invest in wine and it'll stay at like certain houses, make sure the temperature's good, distribution, you could do that. Or you can invest in certain apps and invest in wine. You can invest in Masterworks, which is like you put money towards them, they buy expensive art, they resell it, you get paid a dividend. Obviously, stocks for the most part, like mutual funds, real estate investment trusts, obviously real estate, which we already said. I think I already said land, but in general, you could buy like you could buy like agricultural land. Like there are so many assets that do appreciate. And yes, I think some of those examples you guys gave are great ones.
Thank you.
All right. Do we have anything else?
Congrats to us. Congrats
to us. That was great. I'm going to go into a little tease for next episode, because next episode we have one of my favorite guests. She was so great. Her story is awesome and her confidence is next level. It is Shannon Ford. Now, David, what you're going to like is towards the end of the episode with Shannon Ford, I have a list of like 10 things that I ask her, because I think you and her have like very similar personalities. And like, I think you're like, your financial acumen is pretty similar. So I was curious if she could stump the curious Canadian, because you always come to me with questions, things that you weren't aware of in the episode that you want clarity on. So I asked her like a list of 10. I'm going to ask Lo just two of those to tease it and see if Lo knows things that the curious Canadian did not. Lo, are you ready?
Sure.
First one. What does KPI mean?
KPI stands for, I don't know.
Yes.
Wow. Okay.
I have no idea.
Second one.
No idea.
Spell.
I knew you. I hope you're going to ask this.
Spell tertiary.
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 Can it be used in a sentence, please? I need to hear it in a sentence.
They have a tertiary lien position on the commercial real estate project.
Tertiary. Okay. Tertiary. T-U. Am I good so far? Isn't it U?
Just keep going.
T-U-R. S-H-E-R. A-R. I don't know. Tertiary.
You got the second letter wrong. But
T-E.
David, what do you think it was?
What?
I honestly don't even know.
I've never used that word in my life and don't ever plan on using it. Ever.
What do you think it means? Tertiary.
Some sort of a hold.
Wow, it's pretty. So tertiary. So
no, it's bullshit. It's bullshit. It's
like some sort of a hold. Some sort of a hold, like a dominant hold on something. Like,
I know. I mean, it's not terrible. You have a primary, secondary, tertiary, first, second, third. It's like it represents like a third lien position on something.
Got
so
it.
Like if
not completely off base.
Not completely
why not?
Off.
Why not call it third then instead of tertiary?
Because
primary, secondary,
secondary, thirdary. Not a word, David. I don't know what they teach you up in Vancouver, but not here.
Not tertiary. They're not teaching us that. That's for sure.
All right. Any other last minute thoughts you had on
what's
that
KPI?
KPI, key performance indicator.
Oh, right. Okay.
So like
okay.
You're looking at your KPIs for the podcast, your downloads. Blah, blah, blah. All right, David.
There's no chance that Shannon knows how to spell tertiary.
Well, you will find out next episode. Shannon Ford.
I want to come back to this podcast too.
Yeah, but we never had a repeat.
Why?
Guest.
You guys just drain people of their information, get all of their finances down.
It's insights.
Get
David.
All their
it's
secrets
insights.
And then cast them away.
It's secrets so that one they can and motivate done? And inspire the money mafia.
Bunch of fuckboys on here. Just sleep with them and just never call them back.
Hey guys, if you think we should have the one and only Low Show back, the Luscious Low. Go give us 5 stars and say bring Luscious Low back.
Like, no, don't bring him back.
We could do a whole nother episode with you. I think
I have more secrets to reveal.
Are you on OnlyFans?
What?
Are you on OnlyFans?
No, I'm not putting my butthole and shit on OnlyFans.
I feel like you would.
Probably would. Yeah. Times are tough, but I'm okay right now.
Any other thoughts on the Steve Wilco show?
He was great. I love how open and candid he was. Love that he talked about his salary. $250,000, right? Is what he was getting.
Yeah,
it was great. Nice guy. Man's man, too. I love how butch he was.
Yeah, I felt that. And he's just a great, like, I wanted to go have a drink with him.
Same.
All right. This is the longest recap in the history of the Trading Secrets show. We hope you guys are enjoying it. David, aka Lo, you're never welcome back. No, you're great. Lo adds a spice and an element of this recap we have never had. David, any thoughts before we wrap?
No, I already left a review that I want Lo to be our first repeating guest on the podcast.
Wow.
So,
Our
first ever repeat. We'll bring him back. Thank you guys for tuning in to another episode of Trading Secrets. Remember to go follow us on Instagram. Go follow us on Facebook. Give us 5 stars. We have the Luscious Lo. We have the Curious Canadian. And hopefully you thought this was an episode you couldn't afford to miss.
Please note that this episode may contain paid endorsements and advertisements for products and services. Individuals on the show may have a direct or indirect financial interest in products or services referred to in this episode.